Welcome to Spanish Janice. I'm Janice Burt, and today we're diving into conversations that inspire growth, connection, and confidence. You're watching Now Media Television.
Welcome, my friends, to Spanish Janice. I am here with one of my favorite human beings and just generally good time person, Kathy Cloates Guest. She is a speaker, an author, a creative strategist, and the founder of Keeping It Human. Kathy, thank you so much for being on Spanish Janice today.
I'm so happy to talk to you anytime. Name the place, I'm there.
Ah, you're so awesome. I have so many questions about this Keeping It Human business. Tell us all about it. What is it? What do you do? What does that mean? We want to know.
Yeah. So I started my business, Keeping It Human, while I was still in tech, and I was doing comedy at night for many, many years. Tech during the day. That was my day job to pay for my night job. And, you know, I founded Keeping It Human because I had an inkling, you know, 16 years ago or so that the way that we show up in at work isn't the way we really are. Like we're performing and being performative. And I felt like we trained so many people for a world that has changed. Like we've trained people to not make mistakes, not admit mistakes, to show up as somebody different. And yet the rules have changed. You know, innovation is happening at a fast pace. Product life cycles are getting shorter. AI is out there. We don't even know the full extent of what that's going to mean. And now all of a sudden we're asking people to be like, be agile, be adaptable, be this, be that. Right. Be human. But we've sort of made it not cool or safe and validating to be human at work. So now we got to throw that old playbook out and create a new one. And I think it very much leans into showing up more human. And when we do that, what kind of bold ideas, what kind of bold speaking up, like what could it do for teams and for people? And I think it could unlock so much more bolder people, bolder ideas. So that's really the essence of it. And yeah, there's a lot of humor and a lot of, you know, improv stuff in it that I learned along the way that I think makes people bolder.
Now, did this idea come from a specific situation in your past because a lot of times I talk to people where, and in my own life, like my pain became my purpose, the mess becomes the message. So did you have that kind of painful maybe moment in your life where then you were like, you know what? I want to talk about keeping it human. This is important to me. It's something that I am striving to do. Like, what did that look like for you personally?
Yeah. And I laugh because you're such a great storyteller. And I think you heard part of my story, and part of my origin story was really that, you know, I was two Kathys, one body, never on stage together. I had this sort of, you know, I showed up as one Kathy, and pretty soon in tech, as a woman, I was told, don't do it. No, nobody will take you seriously. Don't do it. And so I was really fragmented at the time, and I showed up very differently on comedy stages and very differently at work. And I remember just being so, after like 7-8 years of doing that, I was like having just this crisis that literally put me on the bathroom floor at my tech company. And I was like, how did I get here? What happened? What did I do? And I realized that I'd given away so much of my, in fragmentation, I'd given away my power. And when I show up as one Kathy, all the things, that's where my boldness lives. And I realized if that's happening to me, how many people are walking around like me, feeling like they are fragmented, not truly, and I don't mean bring your whole self to work. It's not what I mean. I mean, feeling like they're leaving their biggest superpower in the car when they enter the building. And I felt like that's what I'm doing. And I know that I'm my best self when I bring that to work, because a lot of my boldness and my innovation comes from the fact that I've been in comedy for 25 years and I see things other people don't see. So that is what makes me me. And I realized that I had to stop listening to the people who, were like, no, be fragmented. So it really came from me learning how to reintegrate myself and heal that fragmentation.
And what do you tell in, so you give corporate keynotes and workshops, right? What are some takeaways? What are some things that you tell those people in regards to fragmentation and these sorts of things?
Well, one of the things I tell people is that it's possible, but it's painful to do it alone. So what we need is to do it together. So I really bring in a lot of tools that I learned in many years about the way that improv is very much a team ensemble sport. And if we show up for each other differently and we agree, this is the social contract of how we're going to lift each other, talk to each other, show up for each other, yes and each other. Doesn't mean we have to do the idea, but we're going to treat each other differently. And what that does for trust in a group is it makes it just that much safer. Even a little bit of safety improvement in our teams can make us bolder. So this isn't the kind of thing that we need to wait for leaders to do. They should do it, but we can actually, in our teams, choose how we show up. We choose how we can be bolder for someone else, and yes, and them. So I challenge them to make little changes that I think are much more practical and real, and then it shows up in every part of your life. So it really starts, I think, with what we call the ensemble. I call the ensemble because that's really what the improv team is. And I have a theory that every business team is an improv group. Now, you can be a crappy one or a good one. It depends on how you show up. And that's really the premise.
Now, I know in improv it's yes and. Is there that in the business improv group? Like somebody comes up to you, says something, yes and. Like,
Well, I think because improv can go off the rails and everyone's like, oh, I'm a robot. Yes, and I'm a yes and bot. No, it doesn't mean that. So I encourage people to, you can start out by saying yes and just to sort of get the hang of turning a yes but, into something more positive. But you don't have to say the words yes and. It's the spirit of yes and. It can be, tell me more about that. I like that. I'm curious. What about that idea? So where we would shut an idea down with a yes but or a no, how can we open somebody up and be like, I'm curious, you said something, tell me more about that. So that is really, I think, more the corporate way maybe a lot of yes and could be done. You can literally say yes and. I know it's hard, but what it is a challenge to stop shutting everybody down because everyone's frustrated that everyone yes buts them, but we all yes but each other. We all do it. And I was reading somewhere, and I talk about this, that research shows that three quarters of everybody, all of us, we hold back ideas at work. I mean, think about that. Think about what human potential is lost because we're all like afraid to be judged. We're so afraid of failure and fear. And that is really one of the beauties about an improv team is we show up differently and then we go, okay, well, in the moment, what can we do to move forward without judgment? And when you remove a lot of the layers of fear, people take action.
and don't you think a lot of that has to do with the leadership on the top that is overseeing? So, you're like, exactly.
It does. I love it when leaders, my favorite is when leaders are like, my people don't innovate. I'm like, okay, let's take a look at the messages you're sending them. Or my people don't make bold decisions. Well, let's look at the messages you're sending them. And somewhere in there, it's usually layered with all the stop signs. We tell them to go innovate. That's a go sign. But then look at all the subtle ways that we don't. I want the same results as last year. I want you to cut 20%, but increase results 40%. I want you. We're asking them to do the impossible. And the way that people internalize that, they're like, but I'm being shamed. And if I don't make it, I'll fail. And then, so we leaders take a lot of responsibility, and it's all about leaders. And yes, and I don't have to wait for a leader to give me permission to show up differently in my team, for example, and say yes and, or to show up in my life and to yes and my kids, my partner, my friends. And the yes and energy of like, okay, yeah, maybe we don't do this idea, but I'm curious. Tell me more. You know something I don't know. Tell me more. And I think that's such a powerful way to reframe. And so, yeah, leaders got to do better. Leaders, we're talking to you.
And speaking of that leadership role, I believe that presence, their ability to be present, has a whole lot to do with just their effectiveness. What would you say about this quality of presence in a leader with their teams?
So I have of two mindsets, Janice. It's such a great question because having come out of tech for over 20 years and leading teams, I often was told I didn't look like a leader for obvious reasons. And so I have a very negative view of exec presence because I think exec presence has often been used as a gatekeeping device to keep certain people out of leadership. And I would say rather than exec presence, I think we have to think about, not that presence isn't important, it is, it's super important, but I think we have to redefine what it is. And presence is important, and part of presence means making people feel seen and heard and safe. And the safety that people feel that they can screw up, they can make mistakes, they can show up more human. Like, when was the last time most leaders you knew told stories about their failures at work or like admitted that they failed and said, that's okay, we'll figure it out. What would that do if we showed up a little bit more like that? So I think exec presence is important. I just don't historically like the way that we've defined it and applied it because we haven't applied it equally to all people, if you know what I mean.
Yes, and I love, actually, we have to take a quick break, but coming back, I want to talk a little bit more about the definition of presence that you gave, because I'm much more aligned to that definition of presence, which means a lot of listening, like fully being there, seeing the other person, understanding and listening. So we're going to take a quick break. Don't go away, everybody. We will be right back with Kathy.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back. I am here with Kathy Cloates, guest, and we are talking about the kind of leadership that people need right now. And it's not the performative leadership, but it's the human-centered leadership. And one of the most interesting parts of Kathy's work is how she uses humor and connection and emotional safety to help teams become stronger, braver, and more creative. We're going to dive into the humor and the emotional safety part, but I wanted to come back to that concept of presence. And because I just feel like you're right, it's so good to define what it is that we're talking about. And in my mind, I didn't even think of executive presence in that other way. So tell us what presence is again, just briefly, and then why that's so important, especially the component of listening, of seeing other people, the people that are around us.
I think presence is, in my mind, it's do I f do not just do I feel listened to? Is the empathy believable? And is it actionable? Is this person making me feel safe? Do I feel safe? Like I can let my guard down and say things? Can I be more human? Can I be more real? I think people aren't performative, or they are performative, excuse me. They're not real. They go for the performative because they feel unsafe and unsure. They maybe have prior experience. They just don't feel like they can drop the mask to be real because that's a penalty. And I think too many leaders sadly are performative, and I get it. It's an environmental artifact. When we're in a culture that punishes people for being real or speaking up, then that's going to happen. And it, I get it. It has a lot to do with the environment we're in.
Now, as far as leadership and humor, how does humor fit in? Because I am a huge proponent of having fun throughout the day, like creating joy, and even in the mundane tasks that I don't exactly enjoy doing, I feel like there's a way to create joy around those spaces. So what is that like when you give a keynote and you're talking about humor, where do you even start when you're talking about that with the corporate groups?
Well, it's funny because I really don't focus on like, hey, humor, use humor, be funny. I talk about it as how we show up. Just how we show up. Like, can we show up lighter? Can we laugh more? Can we create a space where even in the mundane work you're talking about, can we make it fun? Can we laugh at ourselves? Even if we have a serious meeting, can we just lighten the mood and all admit that we're all exhausted and our nervous systems are jacked? Can we just have a human moment of empathy and recognizing kind of the universal in the room that we're all like, this is crazy right now, right? Yeah, okay, good. Let's just. And I think so much of that is what I'm talking about versus like trying to be funny. I think too many people get hung up on like humor as I have to make jokes or I have to do this. And I think you and I know it in the broader sense that it is, which is showing up with levity and a lightness. And we take what we do seriously, but we don't have to take every minute, every setback, every challenge as oh my God, as so heavy, you know? And doesn't mean we don't respect the moments that are heavy, but lightness adds meaning to the moment. It says we can be okay here. We can make mistakes and be okay here. And if we screw up as a team, if we don't hit our numbers, we can laugh at it and then debrief and say, all right, how do we do better? But when we all create an environment where people can laugh, whoo, that comes down and people can admit mistakes. They can be less performative. So I really think it's how we choose to show up. If jokes ain't your thing, don't do jokes, but you can all show up with a little bit more lightness.
And is there, I'm just curious because I'm thinking about this in a business sense. Is there something besides that with showing up, which I totally appreciate that concept of showing up lighter and more joyful and things like that? Are there specific, I mean, I think this is, I don't know if I should say games to play, but like little, you know how you'll go to a networking thing and they do these icebreakers and you're walking around, and are there things like that that you feel that people can incorporate at work to not just lighten the mood, but get to know each other better and feel a little more open and expressive?
Yeah, and I think there are, but I would also caution that playfulness is what we're after. And play has to be organic and it has to be autonomous. So you can say, "Hey, you know what? We're all feeling heavy. Let's just goof off for 10 minutes and brainstorm, or let's just do something fun." It cannot be everybody has to participate. It's got to be because trust has to be earned. And the thing about asking people to engage in these types of games is that environments where trust is low, people feel like I can't be forced into your fun when you don't even listen to the things that are going on around here. So playfulness is a measure of trust, and the more trust you have, the more you can be playful. So I think the interesting part about laughter is that it is a proxy measure for trust. So you might, if you feel like you have the trust to say, hey, let's just goof off for a while, and let's just, you know, how's everybody doing? How was your weekend? Make it light. Don't make it a formal game. Don't make it a you have to play. Make it just organic. That will work. And the more that you earn that trust because you show up as the leader who cares, the more people will be playful. In environments where trust is low, play looks like a sweeping over the bigger issues. And so you won't get a good response. And if you find that playfulness is waning in your organization, the honest truth is trust is low.
Ooh, that's such a good point. And when you were working in tech, how did you, was there anybody in leadership where you felt like they had earned your trust, or did you feel that trust was always kind of low in that environment?
It was interesting. I would say there's a lot of environments that were low on trust overall, but in my individual groups, I had different bosses that actually did some amazing things. So I talk about in one of my keynotes, Janice, I had a boss, and he was like a Spitfire. He was a lot like me. He was a challenger brand because he was just like, okay, I don't care what everybody else does. We're going to do this differently. And every Monday with his direct reports, every Monday, he would be like, all right, everyone, we're going to go around the room. Remember, what'd you fail at and what'd you learn? And he went first. And I can't tell you how important that was because he put a deposit in the bank of trust. And so he would tell us, okay, last week I tried this with this team. It did not work. It blew up. And then he'd laugh at himself. And he was like, okay, here's what I learned though. And so then everyone had to go and it leveled the playing field because everyone had to do it. And he went first. So he made it safe. And what happened over time was as time went by, everybody was more open about their failures. Everybody celebrated the learning. We shared more learning. And nobody blamed each other for mistakes because you didn't have to. It was okay to take smart risks and failures and then celebrate them. It normalized taking risks. And so it changed the way the team operated. And I'll never forget that. And when I went on to manage bigger and bigger teams in tech, I used that technique because it was a way of like right from the beginning saying, this is different here. Let's build trust together. But you got to do it consistently. And you really got to make sure that if everybody says their failure, there is support. And you radically have to protect that.
That is so good, Kathy. I'm like thrilled that you shared that because I am actually going to use that with my kids. I'm just going to say, what did you fail at? What did you learn from it? I'll start first. You know, if you have dinner together, you could sit around the table and everybody shares their day or whatever. But I feel like those questions are so good to normalize it. First of all, like everybody fails. You're not a loser just because you had something not work out. Like we all have that experience. And then the most important part is what did you learn? Because that's failing is like just what do they say fail forward, or you're learning something, you're growing in those failures. What other story? I know you must have a gazillion stories from just your time at work and working with teams and all of that. Is there a story that just sticks out in your head of something that happened where there was some transformation and somebody was doing something a certain way and then implemented some of what you teach and there was just this transformation?
When I'm working with teams, I can notice it right away. I hear back from a lot of teams that when they apply it consistently, it makes a difference. I've had teams come back to me and say they won business, more business. They've reduced their conflict. I had one team that was so confrontational, but that was the culture. That was kind of the culture they were in. But that confrontation and conflict is not inherently bad. It's like we just, as humans, need to learn how to handle it. And they reported back to me that they spend so much less time arguing and blaming because they now go around the room and accept that failure is part of the process. And because they started talking to each other in much more, tell me more about that. I'm curious about that. They don't argue. The conflict is a lot less. The trust is higher. And like they told me that they were being able to get more ideas done. They were, cooperating and collaborating with more teams in the company, that their customers were happier because they were getting better service for them. And I think that's where it starts. It starts with the team being more functional, All the things that are distractions start to, I mean, they don't go away because we're humans, we're imperfect, but they have a system for how they handle it better. And that's what I love hearing is that it's there. Teams have all the good stuff. It's not that teams aren't creative or smart or funny or talented. They're all there. It's just they don't often have the tools. And it's not like leaders, unfortunately, are giving it to them. All leaders do is go, hey, go innovate. But they never throw a lifeline to teams and tell them, here's how to make it safer. And teams are kind of left figuring that out for themselves. So, yeah, I love hearing that stuff from team. And it starts with the team and the leadership. And when I know that that's changed and the team is treating each other better, I get excited because I know that's the first domino to fall. And then everything else goes. Yeah.
That must just be such fulfilling work. Everybody, stay tuned. We are going to be back with more with our guest, Kathy. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back, mis amigos, to Spanish Janice. I am here with my guest, Kathy. And Kathy, please let everybody know who's listening where they can find you, a website, your social media. So if you want to connect with Kathy, here's how you can do it.
A couple ways. Thank you, Janice. You can go to keepingithuman.com. That's my main place because it's my website. You can catch me on Insta and LinkedIn. It's a little boring on LinkedIn, but you can still find me there. If you're looking for comedy, I actually have it's Kathy Guest Comedy on Insta, so you find out all about when I'm performing and all that good stuff. So.
Okay, I have a question for you though, Kathy. Why is your LinkedIn boring? Why?
I don't think my LinkedIn is boring. It could be better. Here's what it is. I find that I don't know what it is. It's maybe it's my feed or I don't know if the algorithm, it's probably not true. I have to constantly find new ways to get my message out. Sometimes I'll do parody videos and all kinds of stuff. I think I just it's not even just my stuff, which I always am trying to figure out how to be better at saying what I do in a fun way. But everyone in my feed, and I go, oh my God, people are missing such an opportunity to have more fun and to be lighter. And people aren't good, but they're like, this is LinkedIn and you have to be serious. I'm like that all the time. So I go to LinkedIn and it's like boring or people are arguing politics. And I'm like, it doesn't have to be a dumpster fire. LinkedIn doesn't have to be where humor goes to die. It doesn't have to be that. And I feel sad. I feel like I want to get a defibrillator and like just go, because I just like, come on, everybody. So I admit sometimes it's like I walk into LinkedIn and I look around and go, nope, and I walk out.
You're like, see ya, peace out of here. I'm going to Instagram. So maybe, I mean, part of living an amazing life, in my opinion, is showing up big, bold, and brave. And there's a lot of fear that gets in the way of doing that. And in life and on LinkedIn, I would say that is the case where a lot of times there's just fear that holds us back from truly showing up maybe lighthearted with humor, showing up, whatever is authentic to where we're at and who we are. What has been your recipe for living a brave, bold life?
You know, it's one of those things I was telling you, I think about all the time. And I think for me, it's I gotta always do stuff that scares me. And people are surprised when I say that because, you know, I've been doing improv and stand-up for many, many years, but I still get comfortable with certain things and I still need to scare myself. I still need to scare myself during a keynote and try something I've never tried before live and see if it works. And sometimes it doesn't work. And I tell people, I just ran an experiment. And it didn't work. And it's okay, because now we know. And so I try to walk it live without the net in my keynotes. And I try to do that in my comedy. Like, you know, what else can I talk about that even I don't know if it'll be received? So I'm always trying to figure out ways to be braver. And I think I realize that my ability to experiment and try new things is in direct proportion to how satisfied I am with my life, that I'm not getting complacent and just, doing the same things over and over, that and phoning it in. So I keep reminding myself of the power of experiments and just in my own life. That's what I'm trying to do right now.
So that's what you're trying to do right now. I know in the past, I mean, there had to be a first time for stand-up comedy for you. So what was that like going from the tech world, like you're a techie, right? And you're in that world, and then you're wanting to go on a stage and make people laugh and be lighthearted. What was that like for you?
Well, so it was terrifying, but I will say that I didn't. A lot of people like to say she's a tech person turned comic, but the truth is I parallel path. I was fragmented. I lived two worlds. So I would do tech during the day, and then at night do comedy stages. And I was terrified, and it was scary. And I don't even remember the first couple of times I was on stage, because it was like an out of body experience. I couldn't even tell you what I said. I don't remember. But then I realized the beauty of the stage was I felt the safest, because I could say things I couldn't say in tech. Like I could talk about the fact that, I was a woman in tech, and it's very male dominated, and all the male groups got names in tech. The IT guys were the IT bros, the accountants were the dough bros, and they came up with a name for the women in my division, Kathy and Brenda. I could talk about all this stuff, and I could say the things that I wanted to say and couldn't say as a woman in tech, that I found refuge and safety and expression in the stage. So for me, it became a place of it where I could, and if I failed, and I did, to learn what worked, but it was okay because you were expected to fail. And I honestly felt like other comics were like, okay, way to go. You tried it, it didn't work. But that's the stage where back in tech, I didn't get that. Nobody said, way to go, you failed. Tell us about it, until I had that boss. And I realized that so much of what I had been doing on comedy stages was innovation. I was literally running experiments, trying stuff, failing, going, okay, that didn't work. And I thought, if I could do that here, why can't we do this here in our teams? Why can't we bring more of that support to our teams?
Oh my goodness. How do you sit down and write your bits, like your comedy script, so to speak? What is that process like for you?
Well, I write about stuff that makes me laugh, stuff that I'm dealing with, my 17-year-old just got his driver's license, and I was panicking about it. I was like, I can't afford to, how am I going to pay for car insurance for a 17-year-old kid? How am I going to do that? I was like, we have like, two hands. You're in good hands. It's like, I can't afford two hands of coverage. I can afford one finger. You know which one the company gave me. Just talk about stuff that I know, the stuff that frustrates me, that makes me excited, the stuff about being a mom, the stuff of being a woman in business, the stuff about tech, the stuff about, all the things about that are so weird, that's weird. And I just write from there. I really don't even have an agenda. If something bugs me, or if something happens in my world that makes me go, what is that? I just talk about it. And I find that that's really the best approach, because it's real. It's not coming from out there, me trying to write jokes like everybody else. It's like, what does Kathy think about this? And I'm really, tuned into that. Like The other day, I did comedy, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, you're really funny and you're really short. And I was like, well, I don't know what to do with that. I feel like you just put a $20 bill in the tip jar. You're funny. And then you reached back in and took a $5 bill back. I was like, what is happening? So I just write from what I know. And I feel like it's more close to authentic, because it's really me and my voice. And that's the best advice I ever got, was don't write about things that other people are writing about that you don't have a strong opinion on. Write about the things that you have a strong opinion on, because then that's where your voice is going to shine. And when I write about being a woman who came out of tech, I can talk about that with such credibility because I lived it. And that's the thing that no one else who lived that can really, I think, duplicate if you haven't lived that life, you know?
Well, and I think it's about also, I mean, you could sit down and write something you find interesting or whatever, but there's something I think that comics have, and it's making these connections. There's something about making connections with a story and then being able to connect. I can't even explain it very well, but like if I sit down to try to write a bit, I find that I'm learning how to do that, but it doesn't come as naturally as some people just immediately, like you're saying about the two hands and then the finger and the this, and it's just like, oh, that's funny, that's cool. I don't know that I would have thought of that per se. And now that AI is out there, you
AI's
know.
out there, but I don't like AI. I mean, I've looked at AI and I saw every once in a while I go and check and I go, is AI funny? Sometimes. But the thing about AI is it's not going to give you your true voice. So I think it's so much better to be you and write through your voice. And some of my best jokes didn't come, like, I got all the tags now in it. The bits are blown out, but I've added over the years and tweaked the bits over years. And so when I started out, the things didn't fall in place easily. I say the way it works is just write all the little things that make you annoyed. And then, like, if you say, you know what makes me annoyed? When people cut me off in traffic, then start thinking about, okay, mind map it. What else about cutting you off in traffic bugs you? What else, you know what I mean? And then you start to think of tags, what we call tags in comedy, that so you could build the bit. You could, you know, so start that way. I never think in terms of a clean bit. I just start writing about what, you know, all the things I can think of that topic that frustrate me or make me laugh. And then the things fall into place.
Ah, I like that because I think I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to immediately come to those what you call tags or those connections, and it's hard. It is, it's a process of writing this, and we're going to talk more about creativity and all of that good stuff as soon as we come back from this short break. Stay with us, everybody.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back, my friends, to Spanish Janice. And in this final segment of my conversation with Kathy Cloete's guest, we're talking about what it really means to lead into the future. And it's not, for sure not, by clinging to outdated rules, but by building cultures where creativity, courage, and our humanity can actually thrive. And Kathy, you've said that the future does require something new, a new playbook. And I love that you go to organizations and you talk about all this, but what has changed so dramatically that that old leadership model cannot carry us into the future?
I think it started around COVID. I really do. I think COVID was a moment, and it redefined how we all have to show up. And it was the ultimate in yes and. It was the ultimate. Like, you can argue with COVID, but it's here. It happened. And so leaders had to adapt. And what ended up happening was a lot of teams found themselves going, rut-row, we don't know how. And, you know, teams that were very rigid all of a sudden were like, crap, there's no roadmap for this. Yeah, there's no roadmap. We didn't expect a pandemic. So I think what I heard from leaders over and over again was, we weren't prepared for this. Yeah, nobody was. And I felt like my skills as a, you know, all the years I spent doing improv, like, this is my Olympics, man. I trained for this. Because when crap happens, we know how to adapt. We have no choice. So I felt like that was when the rule book really changed. I think it only has sped up because of AI. I think AI is again another trajectory and another inflection point that people didn't anticipate. And even the people who in Silicon Valley, I came out of tech, are responsible for its development and its usage, don't fully understand what the impact will be in a couple of years. We've literally unleashed and opened Pandora's box, but we don't really know. What I do know is leaders are constantly saying, we need to adapt. We need to be agile. We need to, keep up more, and we're not able to do that. And that's exactly right. We don't have the skill sets, I think, for a lot of companies for what we need for the new world, because we're so busy looking at life and business as stable, certain, and it's not. And it's uncertain, and it's not going to be stable, but we don't need more certainty, and we're not going to get it. We need braver, bolder people.
And how do we deal with that uncertainty, not just in business, but in life in general? What are some key things that you talk about when dealing with uncertainty? How we can best deal with life in that space? I mean, because as a, control freaky kind of person where I have to do a lot of work to surrender and let go. So I know what some of the things I've used in my own personal life, but I'm curious as to what you've used and what you share with others that they can use.
Well, first of all, you're talking to a former people pleaser, if that's okay with you. So I get it. I get it. We've all had to adapt. Well, a couple things. I think it really comes from improv. So a couple things I would say is always have an ensemble around you and your own personal ensemble. The people that will catch you, who will help you think through your own mastermind, your own, life raft of people that are like, I got you. We're gonna figure this out together. But I think the biggest skill that's missing truly of adaptability is, in an improv way of thinking, is play the card you're dealt. It's a lot of like poker, right? You're gonna have to play the scene you're in. When COVID hit, in the middle of AI, I keep hearing people going, but doesn't work, it doesn't matter anymore. That's not the world you have. You had that world 3 years ago. That doesn't matter anymore. That world's gone. What matters is today, in this moment, look at what's in front of you. What is the path to move forward? What is the best path in this moment? In this moment, because the last moment does not matter. What can you do? And I think I'm always asking myself, all right, given all the stuff that's happening around me, what is the best path forward? And I've had to do that. Before COVID, I was talking about like a lot of communications and storytelling, and from that perspective of using improv and humor. And I still teach those workshops, but during COVID, people said, okay, that's great, Kathy, but what we really need is this. We don't know how to adapt. People are scared, they're rigid. How can we build a more flexible team? And I was like, well, you're gonna have to rebuild trust, but there are things you can do. So I had to pivot. And I think if we can learn, Janice, to pivot and to play the scene we're in, but we don't have to do it alone, build our own ensemble, it will make things so much easier. We don't have to be alone in it.
That's so good about playing the scene you're in or the hand that you're dealt. Because for many years, I would argue with reality, I call it. Here's what's actually happening. And yet, oh no, I wish it was this way, or I'm clinging to the past. And when you just go, wait a minute, I'm in this scene. Maybe I don't like this scene. Maybe I don't care for it so much, but I'm going to be here. I'm going to give it my all in this moment. I mean, instead of that whole arguing with reality, which is kind of craziness, really, but we all seem to want to cling so desperately to the familiar, to what we know, so much so that I'm sure you've heard that a lot of abused women or abused people will stay with their abusers because it's the familiar hell that they know. Versus on, I mean, it could be versus a heaven but it's an unknown heaven. And so they stay in that zone. What's your feeling about that? Like, how can we encourage and support one another to not do that and to create, to step out, to be courageous, to be bold and brave?
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me, it, what you said is really, it, clinging to that past is that yes, but it doesn't matter anymore. When I think part of being braver and bolder is always asking yourself in this moment to move forward, what's the bravest choice I can make given my options now? And that may not, oh, and sometimes you said it may be a crap storm. It may be a shit sandwich. It may not be what you want it to be, but you, there's always a braver choice. And sometimes the braver choice is stepping into the unknown and making that choice. And I think what helps me ground it is everything is a little experiment. And sometimes we don't have to look at it as, I can never go back. If I go there, it's not undoable. But sometimes it is. And if it doesn't work out, you can choose another path. It's not the end of the line. And I think just realizing that as we take steps, we don't have to see the big picture, but one little yes and at a time. I'll yes and this next step. Now new options, you know, reach. It's like a level in video games, because that's how I talk to my kids, right? And then, you know, if that appears and now I have new choices, I can say yes and to something small in that moment, in the next moment. And I don't have to know where everything's going to go to be able to make a small, brave choice. So just the smallest, bravest choice in a small, small thing can help. And knowing that you have your ensemble to have your back, that helps give you the bravery. That gives you that sort of that, what I call the bold net. And it's the title of my talk is the bold net. Like, how do we build that bold net? And so much of it is our relationships with ourselves and with people.
That bold net, that's huge. I know as I was walking through fear throughout these last 15 years or whatever, where I've done the one fear per year, I always say I've never done one of those things on my own. It's always been with either a training group, a mentor, a coach, somebody that encourages, that motivates, that maybe gives you knowledge and information. So in your own life, who is your brave, bold net? Who is there for you in your life?
Well, so I'm lucky enough to have a great partner. My husband is great. I'm lucky. I have great friends, you know, people, including people like you that I'm getting to know. I like-minded people who, no matter what happens, are like, okay, well, you got this. Just what's the bravest choice you can make given what you, what's in front of you now? And they always remind me that it doesn't matter. Whatever you choose, if it doesn't work out, we got you. You can always make a different choice and we're going to be there. We don't magically disappear. We're there. We're your ride or die ensemble. And having that can make us braver and bolder. So I think it's just these little things, you know, and I think if you can have those people in your life, and if you don't, you can still work on them by showing up for other people. Start building those bridges and show up for other people the way you want them to show up for you. And little by little, you'll see your people. You'll see who stands and who stays, and no matter what happens. And my, you know, my hubby's my ride or die, because I can remember like we weren't even married yet, and I had this really crazy idea. I was still in tech, and I was working on a comedy show, and I said I have this really crazy idea. I called him at like midnight, and he was up, and he said that is the most batshit idea you've ever had. And he's like, okay, I'll be over in 10 minutes with some beer. Ride or die. He's a keeper. So you need those people that will show up for you. And I will help you yes and that. I will help you figure out a way, but I got you.
Oh, thank you, Kathy, for just this very encouraging conversation. I have you've given me several takeaways, actually, that I'm going to go and apply to my own life. So I'm super grateful for you. I'm grateful for the work that you do. and for being able to network with you and see you at different speaking events. You are just a joy and a light. And everybody who is listening out there, get your ensemble together. Go out and make that best, next, brave step. And then trust that you are going to be held. You are going to be safe. And, you know, we're just walking each other home on this journey of life. So be well, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Spanish Janice. We'll see you next time.